Not for want to start by saying happy birthday, dude.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
How do you feel?
I feel old, 22.
Really? Do you feel old?
Yeah, I feel old.
I feel like right now, 22 is the right age where I want to be.
Well, that's, you don't really have a say in the matter, though.
Well, the reason...
You're like 22 is the age I should be, because
yeah, I do.
That is your biological age, yeah.
Well, the reason why I feel like that is because, you know, we sort of have like, you know, a biological age, but we sort of, I believe we have like an almost internal age. Like you meet people who are like...
My internal age is 5.
That's exactly the point I'm trying to make. But imagine someone meeting someone in their 30s or 40s who's basically internal age is almost like a 12-year-old. Basically,
there's a lot out there.
Yeah, there's a lot out there.
There's a lot out there.
Well, that's the thing. That's how I feel right now. When I turned 22, I'm like, yep, this is the age I should be. But then I started. But the thing is, recently I've just tried to grow a beard.
I've noticed.
I've stopped shaving basically for just over a month now.
It's been a month.
Just over a month, almost a month, basically. And now all of a sudden, people who don't even talk to me, barely even say a word to me, and now like, Joe, what the fuck is that on your face?
Yeah, I didn't say it. But that's what happens when you start to grow out a beard. You get the awkward, and it gets really itchy and shit like that. Mm. You'll get food in it, and then it starts to grow out. I remember I did it for a good bit, and I got it to a decent length, but I get the mustache, I get the goatee, and I get the sides, but I don't get them to connect properly.
Yeah.
I get underneath on my neck, but it doesn't connect, and it's too patchy. And I know you're supposed to, what you're supposed to do with a beard is you're supposed to wait it out for 2 or 3 months, because they say if you can't wait 2 or 3 months for you, you get a good beard that you like, then you don't deserve to get the beard in the future. But it's a pain in the ass, and also... I always got really patchy sides where I get a good bit of my mustache, good bit of goatee, good bit on my neck and my sideburns, but then they won't connect properly and it doesn't look right.
Yeah, mine does not connect at all. It's all down here in the bit, like this part.
Mm.
Man, I never really wanted to grow. I never really thought about growing a beard, but then I was just like, just give it a crack. What's going on right now is I'm not cutting my hair or shaving my face until the end of the year.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's October. You know, we're halfway through October. We've got, a couple of months left to go, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's about, let's say, give or take, there's about 10 weeks left to the end of the year. Let's see where it is in about 10 weeks' time. See how much it grows then. Basically, on January 1st, first thing I'm going to do is run down to the barber, get the full face shave, get the full haircut, you know what I mean? Start fresh.
Yeah. Well, I just had to quickly Google the name. Mike Beltran, a UFC ref, is very famous because he has the incredibly long mustache that he braids.
And
is it down to his ass or something? It's insane. No, honestly, you could trip over his mustache. I wonder how long that took to grow, because that's mad.
That's
huge. And I remember that he is not reffing currently right now, because during coronavirus they went and asked him to, you know, it was a hazard, you know, for coronavirus and things like that. I think it was for cleanliness or whatever, some bullshit answer they gave him. And they were telling him to, you know, he's going to have to get rid of it if he wants to. And he says,
I'll wait.
So, yeah. which is a perfect segue into UFC Fight Island number 5. Insane.
Mm-hmm.
You would say that night was most likely some of the greatest, not some of the, yeah, we'd say some of the greatest spinning hook kick or spinning back kick KOs ever. So, particularly Corey Sanhagen's spinning hook kick. And then there was also, I really hope I'm pronouncing it right, because there's lots of ways to pronounce that name, but it's Jaquean Buckley.
Yeah.
And
his
step up. Turning back kick was excellent as well.
Well, the first thing I wanted to say was, for a fight night, that was a great card.
Very good card, yes.
I mean, a lot of casual fans just watch the UFCs. A lot of people don't watch fight nights. But now all of a sudden, we want to keep an eye on those fight nights now from now on, because there's some legit talent that fights in there. And the other thing is, one thing I wanted to ask you, because you came from a Taekwondo background, can you explain why that move that he pulled off was so, like, what makes it so spectacular? But what else, what makes it so risky?
See, the thing is, I've never seen it in an actual KO in a kickboxing event or anything like that. And I've never seen it in MMA either. Obviously, spinning back kicks are done by everyone. It's in Barboza, Conor McGregor. You can go on for ages. Everyone's got a decent spinning back kick in their arsenal. But the way he did it, he did a what we would call it in Taekwondo was a stepping or a well, not even stepping. It's a step up back kick. So the step up he was doing is typically you would bring up your – so he kicked with his right leg. You would bring your left leg up. You would push off your opponent or you would push off a bag or anything like that. You would push off their stomach or their chest, and you would use that for a bit of momentum to spin around and kick them with the your right leg. And you know, it does make a good – actually, no, I have seen it once. I saw it once by a kickboxer. His name is Ignacio Missile. I can't say. Is Complonche? Complonche? He's a – I think he's a South American kickboxer, but he used it as well. He did a step up – spinning back kick, and he caught his opponent in the neck with a back kick, and it just dropped him down. It was, you don't typically see it taking place because usually people use the step up back kick on the person pushing off their chest or their solar plexus. Now he used it, and it, to be honest, he used it in probably the best way you could use it. Yeah. Was he went for a kick, it got caught. That guy was going to use it, and he
took advantage of it.
We did what any Thai guys is: they grab it. Yeah. They don't have it in front. They turn it and pull it on their sides.
Yeah.
But it completely opens up the guy to turn around and do the spinning back kick.
But not even that. But the reason why I would say it's so risky is because it exposes your back pretty much. Like, what's stopping you from that guy just pushing you off, or maybe even trying to use that other leg to sweep or throw you off balance?
It does, but the thing is about a spinning back kick is you would think there is risk, but the one way a lot of people – it does open up your back, right? Because if you don't do it quick enough, a lot of people, if you go for a spinning back kick and someone sees it and they're still committing, you literally just push kick them and you push kick them away. It has to be quick. Even if it's fairly quick – if you're fast enough, you can stop them by doing the spinning back kick as long as, you know, you have the right leg in front. Otherwise, it's not going to work that well. But the way he did it was the guy pulled it to the side, hooked it against his hip, and quite quickly he turned around and he didn't do what most people do with spinning back kicks. Spinning back kicks are typically hitting in the solar plexus. They're brilliant for dropping people. But he'd gone up to the head, which is what you would usually do for a step up back kick because you've used that for height. Sometimes when they use the step up back kick for height, they're not countering when someone's kicking to your stomach and you're turning and doing a back kick. What he's doing is he's had his leg hooked. He doesn't need to do the push off because the guy's holding his leg. And he literally just quickly jumps up on one leg, rotates, and kicks him in the head. And it was very, very well done. And it's from someone I didn't expect. Jaquim Buckley pulled off a great KO when a lot of people were actually thinking that his opponent, Impa, I think his name is Impa Kasangane. Kasangane, a lot of people were going for Impa because Impa was, you know, the one that was being pushed a little bit more. Impa, I'd hardly seen any interviews with Buckley, but I'd seen interviews with Impa on numerous MMA news outlets. I've also seen him being pushed in the when you look on UFC Fight Island 5 on the YouTube channel, the UFC literally goes, these are some fighters you should know about that you may not know about. They didn't say anything about Buckley, but they said, you know, Impa, Kasangane, and all these other people. So he wasn't pushed, but he stole the show. So it was very interesting to see that. And I think, you know, what was interesting was I watched one of his interviews and he said, look, I've actually been trying to go under the radar. And the reporter literally says, bro, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to work.
The reason why is because Dana came up to him and was like literally kissing his ass, because Dana's now got probably one of the greatest knockouts in television in UFC history. So that brings me to a topic.
Going to give him 200K or something like that as a bonus. That's insane.
Just that one move. Like, you see him do it all the time in training, but when you watch it on the screen, you're like, what just happened? That looked like something out of a movie. Like, literally looked like
I'd seen it pulled off in sparring, but I hadn't seen it pulled off in.
I've never seen it pulled off before. I've seen spinning back kicks being thrown. But I've never seen a the reason why is because from my discipline, doing Shotokan karate for a good few years and training in the UFC gym, a spinning back kick, usually from when it's using that tie move where basically they just grab the leg.
Yeah.
They don't normally throw – you don't see them normally throw a spinning back kick. From there, they usually try and break the leg away or basically, from there try and go into the clinch or get a sweep. It's but in karate, you know, back when I did it, it was never really a move. I mean, because if you catch their leg, that's it. You already lose points because the fight doesn't go on.
Yeah, I didn't really do the point sparring, stuff. But I had seen it done in kickboxing, yeah.
Awesome. So there was one thing I wanted to bring up. Right now, people are talking about that as literally the greatest knockout of the year, right? Would you agree? Let's just go into a conversation. If we could think of great knockouts that have happened just this year alone, it would definitely be up there in the top three, okay?
Yeah.
Another one I wanted to talk about that in line, if we were to do top five knockouts this year, also on the list would have to be Cody Garbrandt's comeback fight.
Yeah. Because there was a lot riding on. They'd been on a three-fight losing streak, although... It's not like he lost three fights to chumps. They were, two was one from one opponent and the other one was for a different opponent. And they were the top of the crop. They were the best of the best. So,
and he came back with a beautiful hook off the cage. As I said, that was something we hadn't really seen before. Right from a duck off the cage, perfectly landed, walks off.
Yeah, he slipped and then knocked him with that right hook. But yeah, I didn't expect that one, but it was also great. I believe it was in the first round. It was the buzzer beater, and that's why I think it was a buzzer beater KO. So much riding on it. It wasn't given an easy opponent. I think it was number five at the time, Rafael Asanzo. Yeah. And then another good one was Sean O'Malley's one.
Oh yeah,
that was a really good one as well.
Another one I thought that was brilliant was Derek Brunson's. Knockout.
Derek Brunson's knockout was very good as well.
Yeah, over Alexini.
Yeah, Alexei. Yeah,
that was a really good one. Another one was Gilbert Burns? Gilbert Burns' little brother. He performed that beautiful place knee.
Oh yes,
That was beautiful.
I would say one for me, and I know this is more of a technical knockout.
Yeah,
but it wasn't super flashy,
yeah,
right, because this was technically by the refs was Herb Dean stopping this, but I think one really good technical knockout was Tony Ferguson losing to Justin Gaethje. Now that happened in the fifth round with only 2 minutes left. You could argue that Tony's uppercut in the second round of their fight may have got him to win that round.
Yeah.
Every other round, Justin dominated.
Yes.
He dominated and he did. At the end of the fight, Tony Ferguson looked like he'd fought Tony Ferguson. His face was so beat up, right? And it was something so weird because he hadn't lost in 12 fights.
Yeah.
Right? Those fights weren't, back to back to back to back, but those 12 fights, he hadn't lost, and Justin snapped a 12-win streak, right? And he did it just constantly hitting with those left hooks. Oh. The amount of power that's behind that guy, which is so weird because he's from a pretty good wrestling background, but doesn't take down any opponents.
No, right? Even though he's actually got a very, very high-class wrestling game, he was an, I think what he was a state wrestler back in high school, and he went to college and a relief wrestler there. And he's a, the dude's a freaking social worker, all right. And then I remember that video photo people put up, and it's basically Khabib wearing glasses and a beret, and then it's Justin wearing glasses. And I say these are two of the most baddest men on the planet, and they're fighting each other in a couple of weeks. What's got coming out? Anyway, so in terms of knockouts for this year, what if we were to discuss best knockouts of all time?
We got to
mention the infamous flying knee from Masvidal. Come on.
Yeah, okay. So, wait. If we're going to do – I want your five.
Okay, my five.
And I'll do my five. You go first.
Okay. So I've got to say Masvidal's flying knee. I've got to say McGregor's knockout over Aldo, because it was one punch. I've got to say Chris Weidman bringing down the spider, Anderson Silva. I want to say there was Edson Barboza's spinning back kick, the infamous spinning back kick where he knocked out that guy completely unconscious where his hands.
Oh, no, that was a spinning hook kick.
Spinning hook kick. If I were to say one more in terms of knockouts of all time, I kind of want to say Michael Bisping's knockout over, Luke Rockhold? Well, because, you know, I'm from British and
You're from British.
Oh, shut up.
He's from British.
Call me Slim. I'm from England. Basically, I love Michael Bisping. Yeah. And I feel like I got to just mention up there. So those are my top five. What about you? Are you from British too?
Well, I'm not from British, no. My five, I didn't really think of this before, but one of them has to be, and it's Conor McGregor, but it's not versus Jose Aldo, it's versus Eddie Alvarez.
Okay.
Because the double champ had never been done before in the UFC.
Okay.
But he'd done it in Cage Warriors. And that sequence of about five or six punches that would look like it was so quick, but also in slow-mo, how they just went pop, 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 pop against Eddie. And Eddie had been in so many other organizations and was a champion in many of them, you know? I think that's got to be one of the top ones for sure. The Jose Aldo one is an interesting one because it was a one knockout. There was so much rising up. I think they did two world tours before because he pulled out one point, then Chad's a last minute replacement. So I would have, but I've got to sideline that, and it's got to be Eddie Alvarez's him getting KO'd by Conor McGregor. Number two, got to be Yair Rodriguez versus the Korean Zombie.
Okay.
The Korean Zombie was losing. Oh, no, he was winning the you would say on the scorecards he was winning that fight, right? But in that last couple of seconds, Rodriguez goes underneath. Hits him with that very awkward looking elbow, and the Korean Zombie, who is known for taking a hit and keeping walking forward, just slumped down on his face, and he KO'd him in the last second of the fight.
Yeah.
So that one's got to be another one. I would also have to have the Michael Bisping versus Luke Rockhold.
Yeah.
Just because Michael Bisping had been through so much.
He was a gatekeeper.
And 12 of his fights, you know, he couldn't see. And there were so many times he missed out on his title shot. So many times. Yeah. They've got a brilliant documentary the UFC produced. I think it's called Destiny by Michael. With Michael Bisping. That's I think it's 45 minutes or an hour. And it's a brilliant documentary on Michael Bisping's career. I don't know who else. The other two, I don't know. I'm not too sure. There's a lot of really, really, another one's going to be the Masvidal. The Masvidal flying knee, just because it was so fast. There was so much leading up to it. And this was Ben Askren coming from 1FC to the UFC. And they were kind of giving some fucking brutal opponents. He came off that controversial win over Robbie Lawler. And yeah, I'm going to leave the last one for something because I need to think of what it is. Mm-hmm. Those four are what come to mind, but there's one I know is on the back of my head, but I just don't know. I'm not too sure.
Okay.
I've got to think about it.
You got it. Okay. All righty.
Actually, we've got to talk about Corey Sanhagen. So he'd beat Marlon Moraes.
Which is a bit of a strange because Marlon Moraes won his last fight against Jose Aldo, but a lot of people were basically saying that technically Jose Aldo won that last fight.
I thought Jose won. Yeah. I thought Jose won.
Yeah, so Corey Sanhagen, beautiful, beautiful back kick to Marlon Moraes.
Spinning hook kick.
Spinning hook kick. So what do you reckon's next for him? I reckon he should fight Dillon Shaw when he comes back, maybe.
Dillon Shaw would be a good fight. I know I liked how he'd already said that Aljamain Sterling and Petr Yan has to happen, which is correct.
Yeah.
He came off such a, you know, he says himself, he said it was embarrassing how he got, I believe he got submitted by Aljamain Sterling in the first round of their fight. So that wasn't a good fight for him at all. And for him to come back and, you know, just come after Marlon, and it was a very competitive fight up to that point because, you know, Marlon was doing very well with the leg kicks and things like that, whereas Corey was picking his shots and landing some nice knees and some nice selective punches. And I thought he was doing very well. And I think he should fight either TJ or someone else that I believe TJ would be a good fight. TJ versus Corey Sanhagen would be very good. Or he fights the winner of Petr Yan versus Aljamain Sterling. If Petr Yan wins against Aljamain, then Petr Yan fights Corey Sanhagen. If Aljamain wins, it sets up a perfect rematch. Aljamain Sterling versus Corey Sanhagen too. I think that would be a really good fight to see. Yeah.
Well, it was because Corey Sanhagen, his last fight before Moraes was his loss to Sterling,
mm-hmm.
like you said. If Aljamain Sterling's right now in the talks to fight, because this was the bantamweight fight, he's in the talks to fight Petr Yan.
Yeah.
So basically, Aljamain Sterling is the number one contender. I reckon Corey Sanhagen could be a worthy first opponent if Aljamain Sterling wins.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I wanted to bring up. Now, the other thing I wanted to bring up as well is that we've been talking a fair bit about Korean Zombie, and we mm-hmm. know that he's fighting against Brian Ortega last week.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people are counting out Brian Ortega and basically because of the fact that in his last fight, well, he got absolutely it was an absolute war against Max Holloway.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because did you know that Brian Ortega absorbed 290 significant strikes in that fight against Max Holloway?
Mm.
That is the most strikes ever absorbed by a fighter. And the only reason why that fight stopped is because it was a doctor stoppage.
Yeah.
That guy is tough. If I could give you...
He's one of the toughest fighters out there. One of the
toughest fighters in the UFC. Because that dude was ready to go on. Now you've got the Korean Zombie, the guy who basically... What is it? The guy who keeps going forward with punches. I honestly think those two dudes are going to trade hands. You got the guy who's known for taking the most shots mm-hmm. and the guy who lives to take shots. So
yeah,
I reckon they're going to definitely trade hands next Saturday. What are your thoughts on the fight?
I'm feeling really confident that this is going to be a really good fight. It's interesting stylistically because Brian Ortega has some wonderful knockouts and things like that. However, trains under the Gracies. His jiu-jitsu is very good. And you can see in some of his fights, if one submission doesn't work, he transitions to a different submission very easy and very quickly. He's very fluid on the ground. Whereas Korean Zombie, we most notably see him standing up. Featherweight, I'm not going to lie, featherweight division's a very interesting division.
Yeah.
You know, you got Rodriguez, you've got Zabit. Can't wait for Zabit, to be fair. Korean Zombie, you've got Brian Ortega, you've got Volkanovski, you've got Max Holloway.
Yeah.
So many. I'm glad that they didn't start splitting divisions and maybe make like a 160 or 165 belt. I'm glad they kept it and they didn't do what boxing did because these divisions are very stacked.
Yeah, they're probably the lightweight and the featherweight division are probably the two most stacked divisions. I would say lightweight is arguably number one.
Mm.
Featherweight would say is would arguably be number two.
But there's also bantamweight. Yeah, there's
and featherweight. I would say those are my four, the main four. I know we've got heavyweight and light heavyweight, but the thing is, like, what's his name? In the light heavyweight, since the loss of John Jones, we've got a new champion now, so it's a little bit easier to say. And also in heavyweight, we've got Stipe, who's pretty much nearly cleared out the division.
Yeah.
You know,
so that's why, you've got his fight potentially happening with Francis Ngannou.
Yeah, yeah.
So that would be an excellent fight. Yeah. I wanted to bring up on the Fight Island 5, there were – well, there's three fighters that struck out to me that were also on the main card. Now, I wanted to talk about – I don't know if you saw this, but Dricus du Plessis. That was him fighting today. Now, he's 15-2 now. He did very well against Marcus Perez. He knocked him out in the first round. Within
it's a shame because I like Marcus Perez. He's a very entertaining person to watch at the stand out.
He is. He
likes to dress up as the Joker.
I know.
He likes to paint himself as the Hulk. He likes to have a little bit of fun.
I want people to watch. I want to take note of this du Plessis guy because this guy has been doing mixed martial arts since he was such a young, like a young boy. He's been, you know, he's done a huge amount of, you know, kickboxing and things like that, as well as jiu-jitsu and things like that. So I think people have got to watch him because he did very well in the with that first KO against Perez. I think people have to watch him because, you know, when you look a little bit further into his background, he's been doing martial arts for such a long period of time. And whenever I see that, it always looks like a nice little tick. Because it looks like they've been doing it for such a long period of time. The fight IQ is there. The experience is there.
The level of mastery. Well, because they say it takes usually about 10 years or 10,000 hours to master a skill.
Yeah.
That's the common norm, basically. So,
And
when people say, the people who usually are the best at something, they're the ones who usually start the earliest, you know what I mean? Like in China, they get kids, but they take them out of homes at like 4 and get them involved in sports.
Yeah.
And that's literally their whole life for the Olympics. Because when it comes to the Olympics every 4 years, it's usually a domination between China or Japan or America. Those are usually the main two that go head to head with each other. Yeah, so who are the other two fighters in your
song? Tom Aspinall. I actually bet on this on the Verdict MMA app.
Oh, yeah. Did you get a strap on your belt?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. Nice. So Tom Aspinall, I predicted he was going to do a round one KO, and he did. So he did very well. I don't think he was very happy with his KO against Alan Bonnot. And so it's an idea to watch Tom Aspinall. He also looks very, very strikingly like Frank Mir. He looks like Frank Mir even posted something. He was like, well done, my son. It's a good idea to watch this Tom Aspinall because he's been collecting a lot of these first round KOs and things like that.
The highlight reel he's got going on right now.
And he's like kind of like a natural kind of heavyweight as well. Another one that there's something about this guy. He is undefeated 9-0. And undefeated doesn't matter too much when you're in the UFC because, you know, if you enter undefeated, it doesn't mean a huge amount because they could have not been fighting people that was up to the caliber of the UFC.
Yeah.
This guy fought Yusuf Zalal. Everyone was kind of betting on Yusuf Zalal. He's nicknamed the Moroccan Devil. I don't know if you've seen that. Mm. They're both very good featherweight fighters. What was interesting about Ilia Topuria is he dominated Zalal. For three rounds, everyone was betting on Zalal, saying, you know, he was the one to win. He's the next bit of the guy in the featherweights. He's a really, really interesting talent. But Topuria, this was his debut. Zalal was being fed Topuria, which this was his first fight in the UFC. And he dominated him, right? What was interesting was, this guy had excellent hand speed and things like that, but what was really amazing was his jiu-jitsu. He went from submission to submission. Now, Zalal was very crafty, and I've got to say Zalal was so crafty to get out of all those submission attempts because it went from, you know, guillotine to – it went to everything, right? He did very well to get out. However, the way Ilya was so fluid on the ground moving from submission to other submission, you know – and he had cardio because after going for all these different submission attempts, you'd expect your arms to blow out. You know, you're tensing so much in order to choke them out and submit them, but he kept going, he kept going. He's an interesting fighter that I'd like to keep an eye on. I'd like to keep an eye on. So next week, what fighters are you most interested for outside of the Korean Zombie versus Brian Ortega? Who are you thinking?
I haven't really looked that much, actually.
Okay, you should go check. Go check.
Just let me check the card real quick. I've just been writing a lot of notes and basically things that just happened this past week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sure.
I haven't really been talking much about the upcoming fights. Hold on. Okay, so next week we have... Oh, well, there's definitely looking forward to the Caitlin Chuko. How do you say her last name? Chuko Gayan?
It's so brutal to listen to. To say those
versus
ones.
Versus Jessica Andrea, who basically just recently lost to Rose Namajunas. So I reckon that would probably... Remember when we were watching that fight? And basically, I'm not sure it was the one before the Rose Namajunas fight. And then that the UFC made that mistake where it was 100-0.
That was so funny. It was like 100.
You were quick to point that out.
Yeah, I was before everyone. I went and posted up on there, and it got something stupid, like something like 1,000 or 2,000 views on Instagram or something like that. It was wild.
Okay. All right. So there's definitely one fighter that definitely stands out, and that is Said Nurmagomedov. It's Khabib's cousin.
I believe so. I believe so. I know that his brother Usman Nurmagomedov, he got signed with Bellator, and what was interesting was one of his coaches actually said that I think he's the best Nurmagomedov brother that we've seen that hasn't jumped into the UFC, meaning he's supposedly a better prospect than Khabib when he entered the UFC.
Well, the issue that people had with Khabib when he entered the UFC is that his striking was just very...
limited. It was very limited.
Limited, and it was quite reckless as well, and it wasn't really calculated. It wasn't as high level as a lot of strikers.
It was almost like animalistic.
Yes, correct.
It was almost animalistic because he's just going forward and... it was almost like animalistic, kind of throw caution to the wind and just charge at them. Whereas he's became a bit more efficient. He's really dialed in his striking now a lot better.
Yeah, because he trained at the same gym as Daniel Cormier.
Mm.
But what was the name?
AKA.
AKA, the American Kickboxing Academy. So that was when he really brought up his striking, and then basically it definitely paid off, because if you forget, when he fought Connor, he hit him with that big right hand.
He did.
So it was still... I'm pretty eager to see it, but I'm just eager to see how that's going to go against Justin Gaethje, really. I honestly believe that I'm not entirely sure. I don't believe that Gaethje will be the one to bring down Nurmagomedov, but however, I do believe that he's going to really test his striking ability. I really believe that, because Gaethje's power is insane and he loves to trade hands.
I think that's one of his biggest strengths, but the one thing I find... that could be the wild card is Gaethje's defensive wrestling. Because he said, you know, he was a very good wrestler, but he wasn't so much of an offensive wrestler. He would typically be defensive and he would never want his back to touch the mat. If your back touched the mat, that was 50 push-ups from your coach. So he never wanted it. And he said, you know, that's my goal to... And we haven't really seen a whole lot of his defensive wrestling before. And we know Khabib is going to test that. He's literally said it. He said in interviews that he's going to wrestle and wrestle and wrestle, and he's going to work really hard to tire out Justin. And Justin has also put out that he's doing a lot of running, he's doing a lot of rounds, he's getting his cardio up there. It's very interesting because you've got... Tony was said to be kind of maybe Khabib's biggest kind of, not kryptonite, but his stylistically, his biggest and toughest matchup stylistically, whereas Justin has just beat Tony, outstriking him. Although Tony didn't, you know, use any jiu-jitsu or anything like that. He wanted to keep a striking match, and it worked against him because Justin Justin's power and the volume of strikes he was able to put out and fight with Tony's pace, which is very high, you know, did wonders in that fight. I question if Khabib will be able to take down Justin as well as other opponents. I don't think so. I feel like Justin's defensive wrestling will be a huge wild card in this fight. And I also think that Justin will be a test for Khabib. I feel like Khabib is the best lightweight on the planet, yes, obviously, right? He's one of the best fighters on the planet right now. He's able to mix in ground and pound, his striking and his wrestling very well. He's able to let go of ego, not get caught into these striking bouts and things like that. We've seen Gaethje's got rid of that kind of reckless, ruthless kind of fighting style where I've got a good chin, so I'm going to be fine to take that shot to get in range so I can smack you and KO you. That efficient striking works so well against Tony. I feel like that will also be a huge test for Khabib.
I think.
What was interesting was Connor's grappling against Khabib was actually surprisingly good.
Yeah, right off the start it was. He showed a lot of good takedown defense.
But then he made a mistake trying to then sit on top of Khabib and wrestle with him and grapple with him further, whereas he should have disengaged. Mm. As soon as he got into a better position, the way he could get out, he should just left out, because that's when the problem with Khabib is, which is what happened with Connor, if you make one mistake, fuck.
He'll fucking capitalize on it.
Yeah. He did so well gassing out Connor that way.
Yeah.
That I feel that Gaethje will be better prepared for that form of aspect of the sport,
yeah,
of the wrestling, especially defensive wise, because that's how his game plan plays out, right? But Khabib, whenever you make some form of mistake, he capitalizes on it. It's rough. It's rough with Khabib. He really does capitalize on any little mistake that you make, you know? Mm-hmm. I would like to think that Gaethje will be Khabib's biggest test because of the striking, because of the defensive wrestling. Khabib's just another animal, and a lot of fighters have huge respect for him because he is another animal. Yes. You know, Khabib's conditioning and cardio is very good. To be able to wrestle for such long periods of time, still not be gassed, and still be able to stand up and strike with individuals, he's got crazy conditioning too. I don't think this will be an issue of conditioning.
No.
I feel Gaethje will be conditioned, Khabib will be conditioned. It's if Gaethje's defensive wrestling pays off and if he can really land that right hand, you know?
Okay.
The biggest factor, I think, is Trevor Whitman. He's a very good coach. He's a very good coach. And I think him being able to use Gaethje's strengths in the fight he would like them to be efficiently, mm-hmm, I think his coach, Trevor Whitman, is a huge plus in Gaethje's corner. A huge, huge plus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one fight I'm looking so.
Khabib's first fight about his dad as well.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's another thing. We'll see how that goes for him.
I feel like that would make Khabib work harder.
Yeah.
I don't feel that would. Yes, that would suck because he's not in his corner, but it wasn't often that Khabib's dad was in his corner, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's move on.
Okay.
There's another thing I've got to bring up. That was a little bit more on the sadder side. Now a little bit more on the happier and funny side. One thing I've got to bring up.
What's that?
Good old Darren Till and Mike Perry.
Oh, God.
You've been posting about it on the last set Instagram page. If you're not following us, by the way, go ahead. Because you're missing out on some quality content.
You are.
Because one thing that I love so much is beef.
Love memes as well. Love the memes.
God, I love the memes. So what is it? What Mike Perry basically put out an idea out there that if you can pay him a certain amount of money, you can actually be in his corner.
People have done it in the past.
Yeah.
People have done it in the past, and I'm pretty sure you have the option to do so. He was kind of essentially auctioning off you know, one of his corner men spots.
Yeah.
And Darren went and said, look, I'll put 5K up, 5K up. And even Darren Till's fans went and did a GoFundMe.
Yeah.
And they got something stupid. Like their goal was like £25,000 or and something like that. And then he said something,
who's going to pay me the money to throw in the towel for him?
That was hilarious. Now, what was funny was Mike Perry actually, his manager initially went and said, looks like the deal is done. Darren just needs to send us the money. And it looked like it was like, oh shit, this meme is becoming real. But
then didn't he post a picture of him and it was his face photoshopped over a photo over his girlfriend and it's him and Mike Perry? Didn't we post that on the Last Set podcast page as well?
I think that was on the story. Dude. Now Mike Perry has actually gone out and said, I think it was today, Mike Perry went and said, actually my manager was just trolling. I don't give a shit. I hate Darren Till. He couldn't give me 50K. He could give me 50K and I still wouldn't have him in my corner.
Do you think that fighters should be allowed to do that though?
Of course.
I mean,
they took away a lot of their sponsor pay.
Say, oh fuck, what if some like rich guy, imagine if Conor McGregor did that. All the celebrities that would just throw money at him.
It's probably Drake in his corner or something like that.
Conor McGregor hosted an auction. An auction off that corner spot.
Yeah.
How much money would people pay just for that?
That would be wild. But what's crazy is a lot of people don't use it. The fighters don't typically go that avenue.
Yeah.
Not really. It's happened in the past, but like not really.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't really want a stranger there in the corner next to your coaches, would you?
No, and I know Paul Felder and Dan Hardy actually said, look, it's happened in the past. We just hope you would rather have a educated person there than a complete stranger or a fan, right? I agree with them that if Darren got it for the memes,
yeah,
I believe he wouldn't throw in the towel. I believe he actually would do a good job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have an own fighter in your corner, but the thing is that fighter is also one of the person you most hate. This beef is probably one of the best. I mean, there's a lot of beef going on right now on Twitter. Like, Twitter, for some reason, is just like the place to be when it comes to learning about fight beef because it's like instantly all the time. You've got Jones versus Adesanya. Then you got... And then Coach John Kavanaugh jumped into the mix, and then you got Mike Perry versus Darren Till and Poirier versus.
Well, Jones. All right. There's two things to say. Mike Perry also put out that he wants to fight Robbie Lawler because he's always said y'all know everybody wants to see me knock out Robbie Lawler.
Yeah.
And then he wants to fight Darren Till, and then he wants to fight Adesanya.
Yeah.
Don't think that's how. Works, but he seems very confident. He's an entertaining star for sure. Quickly moving on, Coach Kavanaugh, you mentioned him. What he did jump into was John Jones actually admitted on Twitter during his beef with Adesanya was that he wasn't hiding from USADA to be drug tested because he was going to fail. State Athletic Commission or whatever, the Nevada State. It was from Nevada, because he just smoked a joint or whatever, smoked a blunt or whatever. So he was going to test positive for marijuana, and that was going to affect. It was going to suspend him. However, this was fight week, and Coach Kammer then chipped in and said, "Look, they don't." That's great and all, but they don't test you before fight week. The week before fight week, they don't test you, right?
So when does the testing occur then? Don't the fighters have to go for a drug test on the day of or before?
There's random testing and things like that. There's random testing. I know it's all at different periods of time and things like that, but they get a lot of testing done and shit like that. It's just funny that he'd always denied it. The story, and now Izzy was able to get it out of him and be like, I think Jones was just like, fuck it, I don't give a shit. Jones's Twitter has been hilarious.
Jones's Twitter has just been nonstop taking shots at everyone.
Because he's been like up like when he gets into trouble, he'll be a bit upset. He'll be, you know, trying to play the nice guy and things like that. But on Twitter, he's been so, it's been really funny because people are just like he said to Izzy, I'll take every last drop of steroids to beat your ass. And he said, and everyone was, you know, oh, why are you talking to him on Twitter really late at night? Go to bed and things like that. And he was like, nah, I took all the cocaine. Like he's really trying to jump back into this presence and persona that he's built from doing the stuff he's not so proud of. But he's like, fuck, why not? Fucking why not?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a strange time because like Twitter's like only just this. I never really paid too much attention to fighters talking shit on Twitter, but now it's gone to an all-time high. But do you ever think that Israel Adesanya versus John Jones will ever happen? Because I think it happens. It's a super fight, but I don't think it will be happening anytime soon. But the beef has gone really ugly lately.
The reason why I think it happens is sometimes when you've got beef, there's two fighters that want to fight each other, but Dana and the guys at the top don't like that matchup.
No.
Just like, so Khabib versus GSP. Khabib was keen. GSP was keen. GSP had just beat Michael Bisping. He was in fighting shape. He wanted to fight Khabib. Khabib wanted, obviously, to fight for Khabib's, you know, that was Khabib's dad's kind of dream matchup, dream last fight for Khabib. They both wanted to do it. UFC turned it down. They didn't want to do that because Khabib was such a huge, lightweight, dominant champion. GSP is considered one of the GOAT. So what happens if GSP... It's one of the biggest risks for Khabib and that huge undefeated record of 29-0. You know, it's something that the UFC didn't want to lose. So when Izzy and Jones started to have this beef and they're saying they want to fight each other, we didn't expect Dana to be like, that's the next fight to make, which he did. He said, this is the next fight to make. He really wants to cash in on this Twitter war.
Yeah.
He really does. And I think it is a good idea.
Yep.
John Jones, undefeated. Adesanya, undefeated, has a huge amount of hype. They both hate each other's guts. Izzy already foreshadowed it, saying, you know, I've wanted to fight in 2021. I already imagined him fighting me, maybe at the Raiders Arena or Raiders Stadium or whatever. So I believe it does happen in 2021. That's an enormous super fight, and I think it does McGregor numbers. I really do.
Jones versus Adesanya, I'm not 100% sure it will happen anytime soon. But if I were to make a prediction, it would have to be at some point at a catch weight.
UFC doesn't like to do catch weights.
They do not like to do catch weight. But even if they did do it, it would have to be at some form, maybe close to light heavyweight, because there's no way Jones is going to want to shrink all the way down to middleweight. Nor it's going to be like Adesanya. He might want to balloon up a little bit to light heavyweight, but...
It comes at a weird time where Jones is kind of done with light heavyweight, whereas Izzy isn't done with middleweight.
Yes.
He's still got contenders. He's still got a possible matchup with Costa in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got Darren Till. He's got Robert Whittaker. He's got Jerry Cannonier. He's got a lot of people coming up to come fight him. Do I think that because he stays so active, he could quite easily move up and come back down? Yes. I don't believe the UFC likes to do catch weights. They don't like to do catch weights.
When was the last time the UFC even had a catch weight fight?
It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
They don't really do them. I can't really remember, to be honest.
Yeah.
What would be good if is they could both make 205. Now, Jones is trying to bulk up. So he can fight at heavyweight. Izzy has already spoken about going to heavyweight in order to fight Stipe and just skip the light heavyweight division, which isn't a bad move. Stipe is a huge name, and that would cause huge pay-per-view numbers as well. I just think he fucking hates Jones, to be honest. I think Jones fucking hates Izzy. Do you know what? A lot of people would say that Jones versus Cormier was some of the people that hated each other the most, right? There was Khabib and Conor, but at that time, it was Jones versus Cormier that were it was the most heated because they hated each other so much. You know, they're punching each other at the stare downs and things like that. There's that one when, you know, Cormier pushes him. Jones,
which was probably one of the best stare downs ever.
Yeah, man. Jones goes to fucking punch him and the whole bit of the background falls down. And
there was that guy in the middle who tries to stop him and, she just shoves him out of the way like he's a child.
Yeah.
And then just shit went down. I think at one point he threw a shoe at Cormier or something like that.
I would say that's the most hated, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Adesanya versus Jones beats it.
Yes.
Because it was so heated. You know, Adesanya is retaliated to Jones. Jones talked about Izzy's dad. Then Jones then retaliates to Izzy, going and saying, your mum would be very disappointed in who you've become and things like that. Jones says, oh, don't bring up my dead mum and things like that. And what started off was light banter became super heated.
Yeah, they're taking really personal shots at each other.
Very, very personal shots. Where Izzy, you know, he's stuck in 2 weeks of quarantine where he's got to work out, sleep and go on his phone and eat, and that's all he can do, right? So he's just doing Twitter memes, Twitter beef constantly, right? I think they're the most hated individual. They hate each other the most.
Yeah.
I really think so. They're taking such brutal, personal and hateful and spiteful shots at each other. I feel like Jones hates Izzy and Izzy hates Jones, and that kind of – it sucks – but negativity does sell, right?
Yeah.
That negativity and that hate they have each other, like Khabib and Conor, it will sell, and they will, and that's why Dana is betting on it.
Yeah, but the thing is, bad blood is good for business.
Very good.
That's the saying in the UFC: bad blood, good for business. Khabib Conor hated. Well, you don't even need. Everyone knows about the story about that.
Dillashaw versus Garbrandt.
There you go. Bad blood, good for business. Tito Ortiz
versus Chuck Liddell.
Yeah, Chuck Liddell. Even Frank Shamrock.
Mm.
They absolutely went at each other in the press conference. Bad blood is good for
business. Jose Aldo versus Conor McGregor. That was the probably one of after Tito Ortiz versus Chuck Liddell. That's probably one of the OGs.
Yeah.
Right, because that was the real one that really topped the pay per view at the time. Oh, bad blood. Does well. I mean, Jones versus Cormier, a lot of them have done very well. Even some of the female fights, Joanna versus Rose or Joanna versus Carolina, like bad blood when they fucking hate each other. Yeah. Like that's it sells. It's
not that, just that, but also in every sport in general. Like if you take in football, for example, whenever Real Madrid and Barcelona absolutely bloody hate each other, every time they fight, they call the match El Clasico, basically. It's like not even that, but it's also probably in sports, rivalries are the biggest sellers in the world. Like right in Australia, we have State of Origin, New South Wales versus Queensland, which is Maroons versus Blues, hate each other, absolutely hate each other. Mm. Then you got New York Yankees versus the Mets in baseball, hate each other, you know? It's even the same in every sport. Every sport has a rivalry. Where the two absolutely hate each other, and it's always those types of games that sell the most.
To be fair, rivalry is just another form of competition, and sometimes hate and anger brews. Like even in Western Australia, like in Perth, you've got West Coast Eagles and you got Frio. They come from the exact same state, but it's Dockers versus West Coast, and if it's a West Coast supporter, the Dockers supporter or the Dockers or Fremantle Dockers, they will go, fuck you, fuck you, West Coast. Like, you support West Coast, fuck you. They're so close to each other, right? But that's what happens. It sells.
It sells. But here's the weird thing about AFL, though, that they're just very different to, you know, English football.
For the American or people who don't live in Australia, we have footy or AFL, which is the Australian football, which is a bit different from – it's different to rugby and soccer and things like that. Sorry,
football.
Continue.
Yeah, football.
Yeah, soccer.
Yeah, football.
You're in Australia, so you can call it soccer. If you go to Scotland, you go to England, you go to Ireland or something like that, you can say football.
It's football.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so point being, whenever we go, whenever you go, I've never been to it. Have you ever been to an AFL game?
I have.
I haven't. Well, one thing I know when you go to
No. Haven't. Sorry, sorry. Have I? I feel like I have. Well, it couldn't have been that memorable because I forgot.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. But whenever you go to an AFL game or, say, a Australian soccer football game, you can place the opposition against next to each other. You could be a Fremantle Dockers supporter and I could be a West Coast supporter and we can sit next to each other, right?
Mm.
In England, you can't do that.
Scotland.
You can't do that. If you go...
Scotland's worse than England.
Really? Well, because when I went to England, when my dad used to take me to football for watch my team, West Ham United, what you have to do, you have to get the opposition in the corner of the stadium and you have to have an absolute line of police blocking off that those two parts.
You can drink at those games though, right?
Yeah, you can.
Scotland, alcohol's banned.
Really?
You can't.
Really?
It is that bad because you've got Celtics and you've got Rangers.
Ooh.
One of them's Catholic, one of them's Protestant. Oh, right?
Is that why they hate each other?
It's always it's religion. They both support Jesus Christ, right? But there's some difference. Can't remember why. Now, it's not that notable that I would even know since, you know, we all went to fucking religious schools and shit like that. But I don't even know why. But they have to be on one side of the other or else they'll either beat the shit out of you, they'll shit in your shoe, they'll piss in your pint. They'll do all kinds of shit. They'll most likely beat the shit out of you, right? One side has to be Celtics, one side has to be Rangers, right? If you cross over, if you're one of those unlucky fucks that goes to the wrong side, you're getting beaten up. That's what happened. In Scotland, probably not beaten up. Probably Glasgow kiss, aka headbutt, or little stab.
Yeah.
Something like that. Stabby, stabby. Alcohol is banned from...
How long has it been banned for?
A long time.
I didn't know it was banned. When you go to England, like, basically what they do now is they started introducing breweries and bars into stadiums.
Yeah. We know here they don't sell full strength. They just sell mid-strength. Right? Yeah. But in places like Scotland, still, banned completely.
If you have a few mid-strength pints, it's always that one dude who can't hold it in.
Yeah. But in Scotland, they try and eliminate that. No alcohol, no drunks, because you know a lot of them are on their last little thing, ready to throw down.
You're only allowed a max of like 4 beers as well. Yeah. Ahead per hour. So if you're in a group, basically only one person can go up at a time and get the 4 beers. Basically, and 4 beers is the max. And they're always mid strengths as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like drinking games. Like, would they go so well together? Because in England, basically, you allow public drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, like, it was always something they would do at the pub. You know, everyone would go down to the pub, watch a couple, a few beers, go to the game, a few beers, celebrate afterwards, a few beers. Christ, how many they would have. But I was so young at the time, but that's how it was, you know.
Yeah.
And that's how it was just such a part of it. It was such a massive part of the culture because there were literally some pubs that had their names after the stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
So... Because that it was like right then it was a perfect location, so it was good for business. So every weekend if they were home or away, you're going to have plenty of people coming in now.
I think it's a big part of the UK, you know, experience as well. When you go to one of those games,
you're drinking
and you're eating and things like that.
Yeah, I can never mix alcohol with food though.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't. I don't understand how people can do that.
Iron stomach, mate.
Iron stomach.
Iron stomach. You can feed this dirt and rotten food and it would be fine. Be chilling.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, man.
Alrighty. I reckon we wrap this up. So we wrapped up the UFC, the last fight night.
Yeah.
The fight night coming up next week.
Yep.
As well as a little bit of a preview for Khabib versus Gaethje. We'll talk about that card a little bit closer to it next week because UFC 254 is an enormous stats card. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a crazy card to talk about. So, we break down a lot of shit. We break down the knockout of Joaquin Buckley. Your top 5 knockouts, my top 4. I still can't think of my last.
You just want to have a couple of minutes to yourself right now to think about it.
Yeah, you finish this off and just tell them where they should go for our social media.
Okay, so basically, stop by saying, yeah, we've just covered a whole bunch of topics. Guys, if you're not following us already on YouTube, please go ahead, or subscribe on YouTube, please go ahead. We basically set a goal that we're going to try and get to 1,000 followers before the end of the year. We're thinking that hopefully we'll get over to about a good 3,000 views at least before the end of the year, and a good to get maybe 20 subscribers on YouTube. You know, we're still pumping out hard. I mean, we got all this new equipment now, so hopefully the guys, you like the sound. But also, we want to have guests. One thing I also just want to bring up just before we let go was my friend from the gym, Cody Haddon.
Mm-hmm.
He recently won his fight at Eternal over the weekend. It was the Perth MMA circuit, and he won via first round. And the kid's a bantamweight, and he's young, and he's 21, 22, is the same age as us. The kid made his first pro debut, and the kid's a star. We're gonna have him in on the. We got to have him on the podcast at some point. We just need to get this whole microphone and maybe
we need another set, or maybe another microphone or something like that, and another chair.
Yeah,
I've thought of it.
Okay, go on.
Stipe me, so because I was running through, because there's a lot of submissions I like, but we're particularly not on finishes, top five finishes. We're talking about top five KOs.
Yeah.
The last one is Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier 2.
Ooh.
The way he was able, it was almost like he was laser focused on that left hook, and he just kept going and going. He might have landed so many, and he just broke Cormier down until he started to move backwards, and then he just went in for the kill, and he beat Cormier. And it was, the reason why is, one, that was enormous against someone as decorated as Cormier as his career, but it was also because Stipe had been overlooked. He had beaten so many of those top heavyweights, right? So huge names, but that rematch wasn't occurring. For whatever was happening, it just wasn't occurring. It wasn't happening, and he got pushed back. You know, Cormier fought Derek Lewis and defended the belt. Then he fought. Then he fought Stipe and then lost the belt. I think that was the last KO for me. That was just so huge, mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, don't think about it. All right. We should end it there.
Sweet.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks, guys. Best. Thanks for listening. Bye bye.